Hi, welcome back. I'm Dr. Barbara Byers. We're going to talk about part two, or I'm going to talk and you're going to listen, part two about exploitative and abusive relationships and changing these. So some considerations, once we understand the process of the choice, the three choices, no contact, no further contact with the person, or maybe limited contact, or maybe full contact, with the idea of really changing and becoming a healthy relationship. Some other things we need to consider. The craving for the other person doesn't automatically go away. And I use that word craving because that's what it is. We're in this strong attachment. It's like any addiction, and it can easily pull us back in, especially in the early days of that. So we, if we're the victim, we're gonna have to recognize how our reactivity plays in, how easily we're emotionally aroused in that, how easily we're diminished, how we have shame and so on. And we can go through some exercises and develop, a lot of times it's skill development. We don't know how to have a healthy relationship. We don't know how to think of ourselves in healthy ways. And that's not narcissism. That is assigning the value that God assigns to us. So like we could take a specific incident, this happened, we could write our response and then we can consider, now what would be a healthy response? Or this sort of thing often happens, what would be a healthy response to that? And we may need to get a life coach or a therapist or a really wise friend. I have a few really wise friends that help me when I call and go, oh, this happened, what do I do? Who will help us think more objectively, because we need distance from that. We need objectivity. And we have used, sometimes we've used this high arousal to actually bring relief to painful feelings. Some things underneath that I don't want to think about and accept, I can just stay kind of aroused. Okay, what about some risks of recovery? Well, once someone has been an essential part of our life, their touch remains, even if we have no further contact. And if that relationship was toxic, we're gonna have to reframe how we perceive it. We really can change how it impacts us. We can't change history. We can't change facts, but we can sure change our story about it and find grace and redemption in it. But our whole emotional, intellectual stance toward that person has to change. So what are some risks we have to take? Well, we have to commit to reality at all cost. We're gonna tell the truth. We're gonna find out the truth. You know, exploitation is like being in a fun house. Have you ever gone to one of those old fun houses? Everything is distorted and grotesque, and that appears to be the normal. And normal then in relationships appears distorted to us. So we don't know what reality is. We have to step back from it. Any kind of trauma like that distorts our perception of reality. And it's not an easy task, but we have to face it and see, no, my wholeness requires that I stay in reality. We're gonna have to risk being misperceived by others, and others will misperceive us. Once you have clarity about what's real and true and good, you have to be willing to misperceive it. You know, we so want others to understand it, and survivors really want that. It's one reason we get to being a victim is we're trying to too hard to please others and to be nice. We don't want anyone upset with us. And possibly in the past, we tried to tell the truth and we weren't believed or we were threatened or whatever. So survivors are often embedded in this traumatic shame and they become so other-directed that they lose their own sense of who they are. We were taught that the exploitation was our fault and we carry the shame of the abusers and we're desperate for approval. Another risk we have to take is we have to develop and implement really good relationship boundaries. Sometimes people get really upset with us when we implement new boundaries. No, I can't talk to you on the phone every day. I don't have time for that. what? And they try to get us back into the old system. Because boundaries are going to force an essential restructuring of the relationship, not only with another, but within ourselves, really. We've lost autonomy in that relationship, and we've lost regulating our own self. So we have to learn to keep promises to ourselves and stop allowing exploitation. And we'll start respecting ourselves more, and then we'll start training people how to respect us more. Yeah. We teach people how to treat us. Second thing, boundaries help us clarify our values. And when we start taking care of ourselves, we have a new sense of safety. It's easy to want everybody else to keep us safe. But when we have a sense of who we really are, we will protect ourselves in healthy ways and we will stay safe. So we're developing a new trustworthy relationship with ourselves. Another risk is we have to learn to say goodbye. So if someone doesn't respect our boundaries, depending on the severity of it, we may have to leave. And many times the victim is actually ready to leave, wanting to leave, only to have the abuser come back around and deliver the most compelling version of their seduction story. That's why we have to have others going, no, this is what's happening. Don't fall for it. So you have to be clear. What is acceptable? What is not acceptable? What are the lines that someone else cannot cross? And if they cross them, it's an indication they don't value the relationship. And so don't let them convince you otherwise. Saying goodbye can be really, really wrenching. And we have to confront our own desire that that seduction story is true. I want you to love me. I want you to care for me. So I keep hoping, but it's a really spurious hope. It's a false hope. And it's sometimes so irresistible. Because when we say goodbye, then the next thing we have to do is face grief. And a lot of times we've held on to the relationship, even in its pitiful form, its exploitative form, because we don't want to face the grief of saying goodbye and realizing the dreams are gone. But, you know, the question is, what length are we willing to go to be free? Do we really want to be free and healthy? Another risk is we're going to risk being alone and having to learn to be okay with being alone. Learning to enjoy our own presence, especially when we fear abandonment and really want to be with others a lot, but we shift that regard to ourself, that it is good to be alone sometimes, to be with myself. And I love what Henry Nouwen called this. He called it a conversion from loneliness to solitude. Solitude is different. And we can give ourselves away piece by piece, and then what we're left with is very little. We're second class status, and we can feel so desperate, or we can regain who we are. Another risk is really the development of our spiritual self. A lot of times when we're in crisis and in pain from relationships, we fight and scrabble all the wrong ways when the Lord invites us into surrender. Surrender to me. Let me show you the ways. And we've tried to flee from grief and pain and every other way, but stay in a relationship that we think somehow should give us love. But the more we stay, the more we ignore it, the harder it becomes. And then we realize that we really are limited. We humans have a lot of limitations, and we're going to have some suffering. So we may as well accept the suffering, because it has lots of things to teach us, and it invites us into a deeper connection to the rhythms of His grace and His redemption. So Nouwen says that there's three essential movements to our spiritual life: connection with ourself and acceptance of our brokenness, acceptance of the community and a renewed trust in others. Sometimes we find this hard. The ability to trust ourselves, that clears the path to trusting God. So really, as we're coming out of abuse and exploitation, our spiritual life can grow by leaps and bounds, and it can grow in community with others who love the Lord, and with ourselves, and where we learned we haven't been faithful to ourselves and haven't been faithful to the Lord, we can repent of that. Another risk we have to take is the risk of being honest, to admit the hard things about ourselves, our failures, our weaknesses, to not mislead anyone, to not live a secret life, to abandon our false fronts, to be clear about our intents, to tell the truth, to not hide from difficult moments, to give up being nice all the time. Sometimes Christians, especially Christian women, have been taught this. To state our needs and wants without shame, and to not cover or lie for anyone else. Another risk we take is the risk to be vulnerable. We have to get consultation, as they say. It means to involve other people in our own interior processes, our dreams, our failures, and when we share with others, then we actually have an examined life. And an examined life is a life worth living. We get dialogue. We shouldn't live in a monologue. We get dialogue. We get others' perspectives. And like stone sharpening stone, Proverbs says, when we share our stories also, we build trust, we build communion with others. And sometimes the common experience of someone else saying, yes, I understand, or I've been there, that really helps reduce our shame. Oh, this is just part of the human story. Another risk is we have to learn to fight. Survivors tend to avoid conflict. You know, sometimes conflict in the past has just been too dangerous. It threatens a relationship that we want so badly to keep because we're in denial that this is somehow love. But, you know, there's been past rules about keeping the peace, about being nice. But sometimes you have to fight. You want to fight fairly, and you want to fight without rancor. But you have to let go of being nice and get others to help and to help advocate, you know, for you and protect yourself. And even in healthy relationships, all intimacy has some struggle to it. So we have to learn to be separate. We have to learn to be together. We have to learn to be real. Another risk is we have to define ourselves. We tend to diminish in those kind of relationships of exploitation or abuse, or with someone very narcissistic. But when we begin to emerge from the bond with them and begin to break that attachment, we realize how much someone else has regulated our values, our thoughts, our daily life, our choices. And sometimes even simple things are hard for us to get a hold of, but we have to learn to practice making our own choices again. And sometimes some of these situations are really heart-wrenching. It's difficult, like a divorce where there are children involved. But we have to take responsibility for ourselves. When someone else has abused us, we learn to let go and to take responsibility because our life really is up to us. We build our own city within, as Proverbs says, and we can play a pivotal role in our own healing and recovery by the grace of God. That's His empowering presence for everything we need. If we don't understand, He is the Spirit of truth, and He will help us come to the truth. And if we ask, He'll bring people across our path. He'll support and love and help us. We can learn to develop new relationships if we're willing to be honest and humble ourselves. The key is to choose to be vulnerable, to be honest, and be willing to do the hard work. And His grace will meet us. His love will meet us everywhere along the way as we come up out of these old relationships and we pursue health and wholeness in the new. So I hope this two-part series has helped you, and I'll see you again next time.